That's the Christian message. But for that, we need New Testament. Except we're not getting a whole lot out of Matthew 24 on that one either.
No. My homiletical advice is preach on the epistle lesson. Oh, well, Matthew 24, let's go ahead and read it, at least to do the grammar, and then the exegetical conundra, if that is in fact the plural of conundrum, are legion, and you really might want to just preach on the epistle. But we'll just jump in here, setting the context. It is really of vital importance to remember that what's happened here is that in verse 3, the disciples have approached Jesus after he has predicted the destruction of the temple, in verse 2, and they have shown by their words that they are confusing the destruction of the temple and the parousia. And the eschatological discourse of Jesus really functions to separate those two events out. Okay. Yes, their question in verse 3, they say to us, when will these things be, namely, not one stone being left upon another, and what, two questions, when and what, supply a verb, will be the sign of your parousia and the consummation of the age? That's verse 3. And the rest of this long, long speech, the first half deals fundamentally with the destruction of Jerusalem, and that goes through verse 35, and then at verse 36, the subject matter changes. Right, and he begins to talk directly to the parousia and to life in preparation for it. But, as I said, the problems are legion. So let's just kind of jump in and at least do a little bit of grammar, which is what we all really love anyway. That was supposed to be a joke. Verse 15, hatan plus the subjunctive, when, therefore, you see, idete, the aorist subjunctive of horao, when you see the abomination of desolation, here's the phrase from Daniel, it occurs in Daniel 9 and Daniel 11. Now let's modify that abomination, that bdelegma, with an attributive position participle, ta hrethen. This is the aorist participle passive of lego, believe it or not. The sixth principal part is erethane. Okay? So that which was spoken, dia, through Daniel tu prophetu, through Daniel the prophet. Now we have hestas, which is a perfect participle active. Let's see, it would have to be neuter singular nominative from histemi, standing, in the place, the Holy One. I'll pause there and go back and do the whole thing. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation which was spoken through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, comma, now we finally get the apodosis of the condition. No, we don't get it yet. We have an interjection on the part of the original writer downer of these words. Almost all commentators take these next three words as an address directly to the reader. These are not Jesus' words. This is an interruption by, you know, and this has to do with synoptic problem and all these other things. Just avoid that stuff. Ha anaginoskon no eta. Let the reading guy understand. Noeta is simply present, imperative, active, third person singular from noeo. And again, that let translation for a third person imperative from Greek into English. So let the reader understand. Now Jesus' words come back. Tata, then, now we have more third person imperatives. Hoi ente Judaea, the in Judea people. Fugetozon, let them flee. Again, present, imperative, active, third person, plural. Let those in Judea flee, eis ta ore, into the mountains. This is oras, this is a third, one of those nouns from Hades, a third declension noun. Let those in Judea flee to the mountains, to the hills. Then immediately, the one upon the roof, ha epi tu domatas, me katabato, let the one upon the roof not come down. Now this is odd because, does anybody remember how a negative, if you want to use the aorist stem to give a prohibition, you use normally use me plus what? Anybody remember? You use me plus aorist subjunctive. You actually use the subjunctive with the aorist stem. But there are a few me plus aorist imperatives. And this is, you have a couple of them right here. It's just an unusual thing. Translation is not so hard. Let the one on the roof, on the doma, not come down. For what purpose? Arai. This is an aorist imperative active from iro, one of those liquid stem verbs. It goes iro, aro, era. This is the infinitive. Let the one on the roof not come down to take ta ektes oikias autu, the things out of his house. Don't go back to your house. Verse 18, when you see this happening, you got to get out of town. And kai, the one in the field, ha ento agro, let that one, me ep estrepsato. Here's another me plus aorist imperative, which is unusual. Let the one in the field not turn back, opiso, behind, arai, to take, tahimatian autu, his cloak. So when you see this happening, you got to get, let the people in Judea have to get out of town. See, part of the crucially important questions for interpreting this text is, what's he talking about here? What's the referent of these events? And the position I take is that he's talking about events in the first century. You know, including the reference to the Great Tribulation. I'll just tip my hand. That there is no direct reference to the parousia and the events leading up to the parousia in these verses. It's all first century stuff. It's all leading toward the destruction of Jerusalem. Anyway, we'll keep going. That view is not without problems. I just think there are fewer than the other views that also have problems. And that's the problem with this text, is that all the views have problems, difficulties. Verse 19, huai, woe, de, but woe, now a dative, indirect object, tais, to those engastri echuzas. There's a dative plural feminine, a feminine plural dative, present participle active, to have in stomach. It means to be pregnant, okay? Woe to those who have in stomach. Woe to those who are pregnant. Kai, tais theladzuzais, and to those giving suck or nursing, right, in those days. Which days? The days when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. That's when this terrible tribulation is going to happen. Woe to those who are pregnant or who are nursing in those days. Verse 20, continuing on, and this could be either an indicative or an imperative, but in context, an imperative works better. Pros euchesta, pray, followed by hina. This is not purpose hina, which is most common, but this is object hina. The hina clause is the object of the verb of beseeching, praying, speaking, asking. So this is the content of the prayer. Pray that he fige hemon, your flight may geneta, may not be. Hemonas, now this is actually quite nice because here you have the genitive of time expressing duration. During the winter, may de, nor, now it's point of time. Time when? On a Sabbath. Now, why is this? The winter part is not so bad because it's simply harder to travel in winter. It's hard to get out of town. There's a big debate as to why Jesus says not on a Sabbath. Does this mean because you'd have to break the law of Moses in order to flee farther than the Sabbath day's journey? Does this mean that your Jewish adversaries would be able to recognize you as Christians and so bring persecution upon yourselves? Nobody quite knows, and it's a minor point to begin with. Or on a Sabbath. Why? For, verse 21 gives the ground. For there will be then a thlipsis megale, a great tribulation, the sort of which, hoya is a correlative pronoun, the sort of which, u gegonen, has not happened, ap arches kasmu, from the beginning of the world, heos tu nun, until the now, nor u me genetai, nor certainly will be, nor surely shall not be. Okay? Many people think at this point this has to be talking about the end of the world, right? I say no. It's hyperbolic language. A good example of this, if you want to jot these down, we won't look at these two verses, 2 Kings 18:5 and 2 Kings 23:25. Here the first king is Hezekiah and the second one is Josiah. Of Hezekiah, the sacred writer says, there has not arisen anyone like him among the kings of Judah before nor after. Then of Josiah, it says, there has not arisen anyone like him before or after. Now, Which one is it? See? And the point is that it's hyperbolic language, okay? This is the same kind of deal you have here. By the way, Josephus says something very similar. He says, the destruction of Jerusalem was the most terrible visitation in the history, visitation of judgment in the history of the world. Right? This is the judgment of God falling upon a national capital because the nation, qua nation, has rejected their own Messiah. Verse 22, and unless, ame, those days were shortened, uk an, oops, contrary to fact, conditional sentence, and if the days had not been shortened, no, all flesh would not be saved. Again, if it's true that this is a local Judean persecution accompanying and leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem, then the sense of this is nobody in the vicinity would have survived. Right? That's the way I take it. But, diatus eclectus, but on account of the elect, that would be the elect in Judea, those days, note the refrain, we've had those days in verse 19, those days in verse 22, now twice, those days will be kalabaod, they will be shortened. Then, verse 23, now Jesus, okay, he's talking about this terrible persecution that's going to lead up to the destruction of Jerusalem, the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. Now, he once again, as he does earlier in the discourse, acts to separate out any thought that this terrible tribulation will mean that the Messiah is coming, that he is coming again. And that's the function of verses 23 to 28. Then, if a certain one to you says, behold, hear the Christ, or hoda, hear, me pisteuzete, do not believe. Now we have me plus the expected aorist subjunctive. Don't believe it. For pseudochristoi, false Christs and false prophets, egerthesente, will be raised, they will rise up, and dozuzen, they will give signs great and wonders with this result, hosta plus the infinitive, so as to deceive, if it were possible, even the elect. Look, verse 25, pro ereka, from pro lego, I have told you in advance. Therefore, verse 26, he repeats himself, if they say to you, behold, in the desert he is, do not go out. Behold, in the inner rooms, do not believe. Those who claim that Messiah is approaching because of all this terrible tribulation, do not believe them. Right? 4, verse 27, Hosper, just as the astrape, the lightning, goes out from the easts and shines until wests, thus will be the parousia of the Son of Man. You will need no one to tell you that he has come. Do not believe those who claim to be able to say it's near on the basis of this terrible tribulation. There's an obvious application there to all ages. Right? Now, kind of a cryptic proverb, which I don't think requires too much interpretation. For hapu e'an, one would expect hapu an, sometimes e'an substitutes, for where a, that little, see that little letter eta, depending on the punctuation in the diacritical marks, that can be one of seven words. I mean, talk about disappearing root letters. This one never has any root letters, right? This is actually the present subjunctive of ami, right? For where the ptoma, the corpse is, eke there, hoi aetoi, the eagles, or the vultures, same word in Greek, will be gathered. Again, my understanding of these verses is that verses 15 to 22 predicts the terrible destruction that will precede the destruction, the terrible desolation and tribulation that will precede the destruction of Jerusalem. Verses 23 to 28 give Jesus' second warning. The first one is in verses 4 through 8. His second warning not to confuse these events with the parousia. Don't confuse the two, because the parousia of the Son of Man will be just as evident as when lightning flashes from the east and the west. We get that in Missouri, right? See, a couple years ago, the house across the street from us was struck by lightning. The switchboard did not have to call me up and say, did you know that there was a lightning strike? See, you know. So, you know, in a sense, that's a word of comfort, right? You don't have to worry about whether or not you'll know, whether or not the parousia, you know. So how to preach this? Well, you could preach theologically the judgment of God you know, upon Israel, upon Jerusalem. That's part and parcel and integral to this text. Mingled in with that judgment is his mercy for those who are his elect, right? He shortens those days of tribulation on their account. There's comfort in knowing that in spite of false Christs and false prophets, that we need not worry about the timing, whether or not we'll know when the parousia occurs. If you wanted to matrix to some gospel passage, you could go from elect only occurs in Matthew twice here, and the other time is in the parable of the, at the conclusion of the parable, the wedding feast, where the guy is kicked out who doesn't have the proper garment on. And that parable ends with many are called, but few are elect, few are chosen, same adjective. And you could work that with baptism if you wanted to. You know, this is what it means to be elect, to be clothed, right? To be clothed with the proper garment which we receive in our baptism into Christ. That's sort of a jumping from one author to the next. But this is in my opinion, and I have a lot of opinions about this text, not the least of which it was the center of my dissertation. This is an exceedingly difficult text to preach, if you're going to be faithful to its meaning, I mean, to its original meaning. See, it's simply a very great challenge. Because it's mostly judgment on Jerusalem and warning, you know, to the disciples, don't be confused. But once again, that can be a very great comfort, especially as 2000 rolls closer, right? Although, as Dr. Rosin taught us last year, it's already happened. So look up, he said, it's later than you think. you know, this, we don't have to worry about it. There's some things we simply do not have to worry about. You know, will we know when the parousia comes? Can we be ready for the parousia? That answer, by the way, is given in the second major section of the discourse. But, well, it's time to stop. Any questions, I'd be glad to welcome, but I know you probably have to get to class, so... Yeah, please. Corpse? Yeah, it's like a proverb. Where the corpse is, the eagles will gather. Yeah. I tend to think it's just a proverb. It says, you know, how certain can you be that a carcass is down there if you see a bunch of vultures circling? The answer is pretty certain. Say, how certain will you be when the parousia comes? Answer, pretty certain. Yeah, that's the way I take it. Some people want to make the eagles the Roman standards. You know, they had an eagle on their flags and that kind of thing. You know, I tend to think that's a little bit of overinterpretation.